Well, the Celtics live to see another day. Welcome into another playoff edition of Shark and the Dog. A thrilling Game 6 victory down in Miami last night. It's going to go down as an all-time performance. If you win that Game 7 on Monday night that we have tomorrow night, it's going to be even more special. We're going to recap Game 6, what we saw. Dave is still in shock. As well as preview Game 7 coming up tomorrow night at the Boston Garden. But first, to my left is the Shark himself, Mr. Dave Nardella, still in shock. Dave, how are you?
I don't think my eyes have shut since almost 24 hours ago yesterday.
Unbelievable. And out in the great state of California is Mr. Matthew Kovach with us. Matt, how are you?
John, I'm 25 minutes away from the Richard Nixon Library, and all I can tell you is that I'm not sure if that was even the biggest Miami miracle in Boston sports history, but I cannot tell a lie. I'm a corpse. I'm Weekend at Bernie's right now.
And in the Granite State is the dog father himself, Mr. Paul Murphy. Paul, how are you?
Very good, John. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Paul, we'll throw it to you first. How much of the game were you able to consume?
I watched 3 seconds of the game, John.
And you watched the best three seconds.
I was coming back from Washington, D.C. I had my little military stuff at Arlington National yesterday and the Vietnam Wall. So I would have been back much earlier, but I ran into one of my old neighbors and I had to give them a ride down to the Capitol. So that sent me back about an hour. A few other incidents on the road always set you back. So I got back. I listened. I knew what was happening, but I had no idea that was going to happen.
When were you tuning in? Second half?
Yeah, you're bouncing a lot. I mean, you know, I hate to say it, but they had the Beatles special on top 100.
So oh, my God. All right, we got to keep it moving here. Dave, just an unbelievable performance. Everything that's been said about this team of if the threes aren't falling, they don't know how to win, and they will not know how to win. And they found other ways to score. Your stars didn't hit a single three yesterday. They combined for 57 12. Points. And they hit the free throws too, which has plagued them, especially Jaylen in the series. He was 8 for 10. He was excellent. What's your takeaway from that game, other than just being in utter shock from, you know, Derek White going back to his early fundamentals of following the ball until the shot stopped?
It was unbelievable because, you know, these last few games that we've won, the last three games, the defense has been so good. And it carried you through yesterday's game. I mean, Jimmy Butler was a shell of himself until the last 3 minutes of the game. And it was because of the defense we were putting on him. Same thing with Bam. Those other guys for them carried. Caleb Martin has been by far their best player and most consistent player, which is crazy because, you know, they've talked about a story, you know, undrafted, not a guy that's usually going to be pouring in points for them. Gabe Vincent on a bum ankle, you know, putting in buckets. And it's funny, every time that those guys touched the ball yesterday, I said, I'm more scared than when Bam Adebayo has it in the paint because I know we can cover. We have figured out a way to cover him. Mm-hmm. So your defense carried you. Marcus Smart, despite, you know, he had some tough shots, his threes were so important. We were 8 for 35, I think, from three. 20%, by the way. Yep. That's absurd. And Marcus,
23% from the field, not even
yeah,
there.
20% from three, and Marcus Smart hit some big threes for you in that game.
He almost hit the timing, last one.
The timing was just so impeccable, and your defense carried you, and there was something behind this game that there was some force behind this game that made the Celtics win that I can't explain, but they should have lost the game and they won, which is why I'm in such shock right now. I'm still in shock. 24. It was the same feeling I felt after the Malcolm Butler interception, the same exact. I still don't think they won.
Yep.
But they won. I still don't think they won.
Well said. Crazy. I think you feel like everyone in this region right now. You just summed it up for them in complete disbelief. Cove, I don't even know what my next question was going to be for you, but just sum up the Derek White as a whole in that game.
Well, Derek White was the parting gift from Ime Udoka. Whether you're in the camp of the guys in the locker room who think that Ime's exit should have been an HR issue, or whether you agree with what Wick and Brad and everybody did and said, sorry, Ime, full stop, see, you know, there's the door. No matter what, you should thank Ime, because he's the biggest reason that Derek White is in Boston. Obviously, he had big familiarity with Derek from being in San Antonio. And when he became available last year, I mean, you read all the stuff. Ime's like, this is a guy that we absolutely have to have. And really, without having Malcolm Brogdon out there, I said it, you know, before we went on the air, everybody's going to look at the tip in at the end, and rightfully so. But I look at, you know, the timely three that he made to kick the lead back up to seven, you know, when you were really hanging on for dear, dear life there at the end of the game. I think that, you know, one of the other things that you see is Derek White's been around for a little while. He's kind of unflappable. He has a bit of a junkyard dog mentality when you see guys wearing, you know, literally thousands of dollars worth of clothes to the arena, looking all sharp in Miami, and Derek White shows up, look like he just rolled out of, you know, Nike Town on Newberry Street. So his parents gave him a gift card or something like that. And he comes out in a Celtic sweatshirt, a Celtic sweat. Just, you know, very unselfish, perfect guy at a championship team. I mean, if Derek White's playing for, you know, a fringe playoff team, you don't think about him. You might, you know, you might not think that he's anything special, but once you put him on a team like this and give him a defined role, which he's had all year, which has kind of been like the sixth man, 6A, 6B, kind of with Brogdon, and can be an emergency starter at some point. I mean, what more can you say about Derek White? His toughness, his tenacity to go in there and crash the boards. And, you know, sometimes, you know, there's, you know, stuff that people say in sports in cliche. Dave can tell you all the hockey stuff. Pucks on net, you know, protect the neutral zone, that kind of thing. In basketball, when the coaches yell at the kids, crash the boards, crash the boards, crash the boards, that's exactly why they do it. And it was, you know, obviously remarkable. Paul, once you get a chance to kind of fully embrace what happened last night, here's my biggest question, because everybody keeps comparing this to Fisk or Malcolm Butler. None of us are super fans on this podcast, including the person who's speaking right now, is diametrically opposed to Boston College. But was this bigger than Flutie to Phelan, as far as Miami miracles are concerned, just in terms of one play?
Probably not, because the Celtics are still going to be in business. I don't think there's any way to really figure out how much money Doug Flutie actually made for Boston College. He actually changed his school from a commuter school. He really did. It was that big. Hey, Matt.
No. I think that's a great point. I mean, obviously anybody who knew BC before, you know, Flutie, I mean, they call it the Flutie factor. It went from, like Paul said, a commuter school to Bruce Springsteen and Boomer Esiason are sending his kids there. But I just think that, you know, if they can go on, if they can make the finals and, you know, whether they win the championship or not, I just think it's, you know, such an important shot for the franchise. And, you know, John doesn't want me to go history and talk about who you got to sign in the offseason, anything like that. But, you know, you could be sitting, you'll be sitting somewhere toasting a Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum championship, whether it's in a few weeks or a couple years, and you'll think back about Derek White. So that's, you know, probably the biggest prevailing takeaway for me.
Dave, let's talk about the Heat here. First things first, thank God for New Hampshire's own Duncan Robinson for missing those two wide open threes when he was having a solid game.
And
he's been good in this series, which is why I would have thought he would have hit at least one of those. So that was huge. But a couple of things that stick out to me with this Heat team, Dave, Caleb Martin, like you said, is a stud. If the series ended today, he's probably their MVP if they were to win the series. The two things that stuck out to me, Gabe Vincent is excellent. He's limited, though. He is not flying around the court like the Gabe Vincent we know. The shots he was hitting, he's great at hitting open looks. You got to get a hand in his face. Let's talk about, I guess, getting ready for Game 7. Dave, Jimmy Butler was having one of the worst games following up a string of bad games and bad moments in the second half of this series. And he scored like 10 points in 2 minutes, like something, and was just getting to the line and doing whatever he could to get his team back in the game. That scares me for next game, because they're in the enviable position of having nothing to lose at this point.
100%. Yeah, it's one of those things. We'll get into predictions later, but it's like the Celtics team, they do everything. When their back is against the wall, they are at their best. And now that they have a little bit of breathing room, it scares me a lot. And as you mentioned, John, Jimmy Butler scored like 10 of his points in literally the last 3 minutes of that game, and was just, he was a killer. You could see it in his eyes. I knew game after game five, when he said, "Oh yeah, we're gonna take care of business in game six," it was the least confident. It would be like, "Hey John, like yeah, I'm gonna go make $1 million tomorrow." It felt like that same tone,
yep.
And you knew it was like, that's not who Jimmy Butler is. But like when it really came down to it, actual basketball, when they had a chance to win, he came to play. And that horrifies me going into tomorrow, especially with Bam Adebayo. 4 for 16 from the field. But the one thing I feel good about is that we have him fully figured out. Whether it's Al or Bob or whatever, you know, we collapse the paint. He can't do anything. That's huge that you can just take that away. I think you take that away tomorrow. But I think you have to expect a big Jimmy game tomorrow, because the last three games he's been pedestrian. And he's going to come, and we talked about it in our first few episodes of how Jimmy's going to have those games. But when it comes to a game seven, a very meaningful game, he's going to come to play.
Yeah, I think so too. I think what people were so shocked about, mostly me, was that game we watched yesterday. We've seen that Celtics game 20 times this year. Mm-hmm. Of you're up by 10, final 4 minutes. For whatever reason, you're losing in the final minute, final seconds, and you have a shot, and it's just like it's not going in, because you can't get guys open. Guys don't hate the big moment, don't want the shot. The fact that we won it on that stage in an elimination game with that storyline behind that series, it just all came together at once, which is why Dave is still, you know, jaw on the floor, as well as everyone else in New England. Paul, what do the Heat need to do to win this series? What should we be most scared of with this team going into Game 7?
Their two best players have been Martin and Vincent. I mean, you know, Dave said the other night when Vincent didn't play, I know it was a home game for the Celtics, but that was huge having him sit out. Oh. It made it so much easier. John, if I could make one point from before, Matt said something about Ime Udoka, and it might have been an HR problem. His situation, he signed a piece of paper, which is his contract, saying that he wouldn't harass the women in the front office. And he did, so he got what it's coming to him. He can take his little crying towel and go down to Houston. I'm not giving him any credit for Derek White or friggin' Malcolm Brogdon or whoever else. He had his chance and he blew it. So now the guy, and I got to give Joe Mazzulla credit. Everyone bashes him for every kind of call that he makes, challenges. If he hadn't challenged, there would not have been 3 seconds on the clock. It would not have been. So I think you got to give the guy credit and start. Everyone blames the coach, but it's the play. When the players go 7 for 35, what's the coach supposed to do?
100%.
Right? 100%. John, they should like have, you know, like they always have a thing with turnovers. You can't commit more than 12 turnovers or you're going to lose the game. That's what they say. Mm-hmm. So when teams cut down the turnovers, they have a much better game. Well, it's the same thing with the threes. Obviously, if they're going in, you're going to continue. But they never go in. So why continue?
Hey, I totally agree. For history's sake, Cove, we will let you touch on a little history here. What game in Celtics history do we need this game seven to be?
John, Paul remembers it best. You need it to be game seven of the 84 finals where the Lakers are just cooked. It's been an emotional series, and Jason Tatum, i.e. Larry Bird, or Larry Bird, i.e. Jason Tatum, just comes out there and does everything. Defensive end, offensive end, makes guys better, big shots, going to the basket, I need to see the quasi, I need to see Bam Adebayo with the oxygen, just like Kareem in 84. That's what you'd love to see tomorrow. But, you know, I've talked about this so much, about guys kind of growing up and, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And this can never be, I promise you, I'm not going to go down a rabbit hole here, but this can never be overlooked. Every superstar in this league, from Giannis to LeBron to Steph, whatever, when they came to the team, they were drafted by the team did everything to set it up to be theirs, basically. The team did everything to set it up to be theirs. So when they were finally old enough to be mature enough to win, they knew how to do everything. These kids played behind Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, Kemba Walker, big names in the game, big contracts. It wasn't set up. It wasn't like they drafted a raw kid out of Cal named Jaylen Brown and said, Jaylen, go figure it out. And you're good. By the way, when the team wins, you're going to be the one that they, you know, laud after the game. And when you play like crap and you're still learning the NBA, you're going to be the one that, you know, Mark D'Amico hammers after the game because, you know, you have to be the face of the franchise. And I really think that you see these kids, and they are kids. They're 25 and 26 years old. Jason Tatum might not be legal enough to rent a car in some states.
We're getting a little history this year.
Okay, but when you saw those two kids in the locker room looking at each other at the end of the game, and by the way, somebody made a good point about this. I think Andy Hart from WEEI said, it's amazing that these guys have been in Boston for so long, and we don't really know a lot about their relationship. We don't know, you know, a lot. You know, we know everything about Brady and Edelman, for instance. We know everything about Brady and Antonio Brown. He was on the team 3 weeks. You don't know really much about JB and JT. You know, do they have dinner together a couple times a week? You know, do they sit up at night and talk? Do they even sit next to each other on the plane?
It was a very good video. It was an amazing video. Everyone should go watch that video of those two in the locker room with each other after the game, and you'll learn a lot about how those two guys are.
That's all I'm saying. They're learning and they're growing, and it's cool to see because you're on the ground floor.
100%. Dave, you talk about what ifs with this team and the situation they're in. If they lose tomorrow night, it is going to be all for nothing. And we know that because you point to, I guess I'd point to the 2013 Bruins of just how amazing of a year that was. It was the Boston bombing year. The Red Sox took care of business. The Bruins couldn't against the Blackhawks, and they had an epic run all the way to the finals, the Gregory Campbell game and all these things. Uh-huh. And those just kind of like go away. And I guess you could say the same thing for moments of the 2019 Bruins as well. The reason I bring up the what ifs and saying don't be the Bruins is because if they pull this up off and God forbid go to the finals and pull that off, they'll start to get into that Patriot territory of where they'll never be out of a game. And everyone, when they have a 5-point lead on them and with 2 minutes to go in a playoff game, will fear that a Tom Brady, Jason Tatum is lurking around the corner. That's what we could have if we want to get into what ifs.
It's crazy, John. You don't want the Derek White bucket to be a Gregory Campbell block shot because, I mean, if I see Gregory Campbell at the Warren Tavern, I'm buying his beer. But at the same time, he didn't win a cup that year. But like same thing with Derek White. It's just that was just so unbelievable. This team, when their back is a centimeter away from the wall, they push back and they win you games and they make you feel great about them. But tomorrow, like my one concern, which I've been all playoffs, is when they have an opportunity to take advantage and close the door. Like they, John, ideally tomorrow, if they shoot 40% from three and play the exact same defense as they did, they should beat this team by 20 points plus. And they play the same defense as they do on Bam and Jimmy even goes off. You should still win the game by the spread. I think it's 8.5, Matt. I think it's an 8.5 spread, which is crazy for a game 7. Like, so Vegas thinks, like, if the Celtics shoot well and they play good defense and they limit the Stars, they should win. So, but the problem is the Celtics team, we all know in Boston that when they have a little bit of breathing room, they get too relaxed and they don't play up to their standards. So that's what I'm really worried about tomorrow. And you really hope that Derek Campbell, the Derek White putback, which was again up there with Malcolm Butler interception, in terms of shock, you really hope that isn't, you know, just a something that you'll forget in 25 years.
Yeah. Well said. Let's wrap things up here. Paul, we'll start with you. If the Celtics are going to win this game 7, who needs to be your X factor on this team?
I like to switch. I'm going to go Jaylen Brown because Dave mentioned something earlier about certain players were afraid. It appears that they're afraid. Like Marcus Smart is not afraid to take the last shot. He's fearless. right? Jason Tatum in general will take the last shot. I mean, obviously, White had the nice tip in, but I think it might be time for Jaylen Brown. You know, he scored in the 20s yesterday. I mean, maybe this is his, shall we say, coming out party, because in all these big games, it's usually like when Matt said about Larry Bird game in that way back in 1984. I think he only had 4 baskets. He had 12 free throws. And late in the game, when, you know, they foul Bird, he made his free throws. You knew you were going to win because he did that. He's like, he is Jimmy Butler, right? Has a poor game, but you keep following him, you're going to lose. So, John, that's what I'm going with. I'm going to jump on Jaylen Brown's wagon. I'm going to watch for him. And, you know, forget about the threes, but, you know, he's an active player, yep. But he's been inactive near the end. So maybe it's time to change that up.
Yep. No, I'm totally with you. Cove, X Factor.
The X Factor is not necessarily one player. I think you can literally give this, you can literally pin this on just most of the guys who are going to be in charge of scoring the basketball. You have to play a lot like Jimmy Butler did, and you have to have coping skills. I've talked a lot about maturity, and I've compared the age and experience and track record of Butler to the Jays and stuff like that. One of the things in life that you gather when you get older is you get coping skills. And, you know, you can't let one bad day carry into the next. Jimmy Butler, they you know, kind of looked at it and said, listen, I don't have any lift. I'm not typically a 3-point shooter, and they're really defending the box against me, free throw line extended to all the places I like to operate. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to barrel to the basket every time because real men get it done at the rack. I mean, that's the way the big boys win in the NBA. That's the way LeBron has done it since, you know, he was a kid, basically, you know, when he didn't have much of a game, he could just barrel guys. And that's what you're going to have to do. I mean, if the 3-point shot is not there, you can't, you know, the Celtics had so many times in that game yesterday where they went so cold on offense. Charles Barkley said it best at the half. Not only are they missing threes, they're taking bad give up threes. I mean, it's, you know, one thing if you're moving the ball around and somebody's standing wide open in the corner and you know, and they miss a three, that's when you go make miss league. But when you're taking bad bailout threes, contested goofy shots, give up threes at the beginning of the shot clock, and those are not going in, then you have to cope and adjust on the fly because you clearly see that that's what the team that you're playing is doing. I mean, you saw Duncan Robinson at points attacking the basket last night. So again, big prevailing message. Anybody who's a scorer on this team, from Derek White to Marcus Smart to the Jays, even somebody like Al Horford, if the three is not there and you just kind of have a sense that, listen, it's not just I made one or whatever, it's just not there for me today, yep, then it's time to go right to the basket. That's the prevailing message, and everybody needs to hear it.
Dave, who's your X Factor?
My X Factor is a combination of two players. It's Robert Williams and Al Horford. If you can shut Bam Adebayo down, you win the game. Because there's no way, I mean, knock on wood, there's no way you shoot less than 20% tomorrow. You have to expect them to shoot more than 30% from three. And you have to expect that, you know, that we get more score. Like, we get more than 1 point from Grant Williams. We get just help other ways. Because I agree with Paul. Jaylen Brown was very good yesterday. Probably one of his better games of the playoffs. And I think you get that tomorrow. I just think you need some other secondary scoring, and you need Al and Bob to shut down Bam Adebayo, because you will win, I think, if you do that. If not, then I think, again, it's a brutal heartbreaker.
Well said. I was going to say Al, but he's been mentioned a couple of times here, so I'm going to go Grant.
I agree.
Because I think that the stars on this team, I mean, Jaylen Brown had 26, Jason Tatum had 31, Marcus Smart had 21. I mean, if you want to win a title, you kind of got to ask for those guys to all do that in this next game. If it's a little less, that's fine, but they should be going into that game tomorrow with the mindset of doing that or more. But Grant Williams has to be better. He's been great this series. He's been one of the reasons you're still in this series. And it would just be great to see him go 3-for-6 from three and have some real timely ones that, you know, pull you away from a 9-point lead to a 12-point lead, get the crowd going, and start to pull away. Because I think if you get in tight, it'll be a little too similar to what happened yesterday, and you may not get the lucky bounce this time. So you need something similar to Game 7 against the Sixers. Paul, closing statement.
No, John, I guess you could throw out the window. Miami actually has pretty good Game 7 history, but, you know, because they're a good team, so they're going to win some. No, the Celtics are going to win the game because all along they have the better team. And, you know, I thought back to the Lakers a few times that they, way back when Shaq made a comment yesterday about, you're not going to win it all unless you get, shall we say, lucky on games that maybe you shouldn't win.
Yep.
There's always like one or two involved in that. And you could say that Game 6 was one game. They gave it away, as they've done, but they won the game. So I think the Celtics are going to win because they have the better team. They're the better team, you know. I listened the other day, and the guy, you know, they were talking about the Celtics are losing these home games. He blamed it on the players, not on the fans. The fans have been A+. They've been unbelievable, and they'll probably be more unbelievable tomorrow. So, you know, it's time to get it done. They have the players to get it done. We keep saying they're young. Forget about how old you are. Just go win. It's right there for the taking.
I like it. Everyone should go watch the 5-minute segment of Jaylen Brown going on with Inside the NBA last night. Charles Barkley, like 3 or 4 times, basically calls out the Celtics to Jaylen, and Jaylen handles it very professionally, and he's just as confused as everyone else as to why they're in this position. But it's an awesome interview, and you'll be very happy that that's one of the leaders of this team.
John, let me give you one more quick thing real quickly, because if they lost that game last night, we'd be talking about how Jaylen and Jason were no-shows on offense in the fourth quarter. I'll let Paul kind of ride on this right now and say we don't want to talk about age anymore. Certainly, I've talked about it a bunch. But if you're having a pacing problem to the point where you're coming out of the gate, Jason Tatum looked like Kobe Bryant in the first half of that game. But if you're wearing down at the end of the game and you're looking at somebody like Jimmy Butler, who maybe kind of picked his spots for a little bit early in the game, as he's hurt, he's beat up and said, okay, I'm going to kind of save it. Like, I'm running the Boston Marathon here. And I'm going to, you know, I know I'm going to need a little bit of gas for Heartbreak Hill kind of thing. That's, you know, really the biggest thing for JV and JT, so they can have that gas at the end of the game to close it at the rim and not take the step back bailout threes and whatever, and to say, okay, I need a little bit of gas here. You know, what can I do? Almost like in Bull Durham when Kevin Costner tells Nuka Lucius, don't try to strike everybody out all the time. Throw some ground balls. Strikeouts are fascist. Throw some ground balls. They're more democratic. Meaning JV, JT, kind of gauge a little bit early on to know if you have to save some gas.
Yep. Dave, closing statements.
I unfortunately think I'm just going to go with the theme of this series and of the Celtics team. They have breathing room now, which I think is their worst enemy.
Yep.
And I unfortunately think it's going to be a really tough loss tomorrow at home at the Garden. Everyone's down in the Cape. Everyone's down in the islands. Everyone's up in Maine, Lake Winnipesaukee, whatever. It's not going to be the same atmosphere. I hope it is, but it's just not. It's not a normal work week in Boston. Everyone's away, so it's unfortunate, but they should win this game. But again, I just think the coaching, Jimmy Butler, and just how the Celtics team have reacted to good situations, I think it's unfortunate that they lose in a heartbreaker.
It's good reverse psychology that you're going with there. And, I mean, you offended Matt so much that he had to leave the program. Paul, Dave, thanks for coming on. Let's win this game tomorrow and then and head to the NBA Finals for the second time in 2 years.
Very good job.
Have a great Memorial Day. Go Seas.